Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your co-host, JP Jampaz, from the two-man power trip of wrestling. And of course, joining me is the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, former NWA Florida World Heavyweight Champion, and one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in professional wrestling history. The man behind WCW's success, the man behind the NWO, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Great, John. How are you, my friend?
Not too bad. I love doing the show and going down memory lane with the Booker of Bookers.
Thank you very much.
And it's funny. Somebody said to me the other day that, would you wear Yankee stuff if somebody sent you Yankee stuff? And I said, I highly doubt it, but I'll definitely ask.
I don't think so, you know. I don't think so. I can't do that. That's a bridge too far.
Because you were wearing Phillies.
I had a friend of mine. I made a bet when they won the World Series. I didn't think they would, and they did. So he got me the shirt. But, I mean, during that era, I did like the Phillies, too.
I guess the Yankees is crossing the line.
Yeah.
So. Now, as far as modern wrestling and what's going on today, you know, they had the War Games last week or so, and you know, they always have something kind of with an homage to the past. But did you have a chance to see the Blood and Guts, as they called it? They didn't even call it War Game.
I didn't, and I started to watch it the other night, but a friend of mine came over, and we ended up doing something else. Tell me about it. What did you think, and tell me the pros and cons.
So the one good thing I liked was that it was a longer match, about 45 minutes or so. There was a lot of blood, which I liked. And it's funny because some people were, I guess, turned off by it or didn't like it. But I liked it because it made it a lot more personal and a lot more heated. But it was weird. The faces were wearing black. The heels were wearing white. And the heels kind of bled more than the faces. So it was weird. It was almost like a role reversal. But I don't even know if they realized it.
Yeah, and was there a reason why they're all wearing black and white?
I don't know. I thought it was strange, but I was like, wow, the heels are in all white? I mean, just going through life, you realize black is usually associated with evil, white's usually face. And, you know, you remember baby faces would sometimes wear lighter colors because then the blood gets all over it and you get more sympathy. So right. I just thought it was a little bit of a, not a stumble or a misstep, but it was weird.
I wonder if they could handle that in commentary because, you know, you got Tony and Jim, two of the greatest of all times, and it's a different era. The grass was greener, the beer was colder, the girls were prettier. We were much better at everything we did. And it's now their time. If you don't keep up with the times, you become a dinosaur.
It is a crazy at an all-time high because people are now selling VHS tapes and making money. I mean, I remember years ago, I couldn't give away the VHS tapes. You had to pay somebody to take them away. You know what I mean? It's just crazy. Cassettes and records and nostalgia is at an all-time high, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I'm a music buff too, and vinyl. Now it's like you're a snob. What kind of charade do you want tonight as we play the vinyl records? Is it clearer? Is it better? I mean, I don't know. I'm not the person to ask because even though I like music, I can't really tell the difference. Can you?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Nostalgia is really in.
Crazy. And with that War Games, obviously, and from 1987, it first started, they kind of wanted to bring it back, be old school, do the quote-unquote blood and guts, because WWE does War Games, because Dusty owns it, and they own the Dusty properties, but they don't do it with the top of the cage. There's no blood. So their War Games is completely different. The thing that I didn't like about this one was the camera work was bad. When the guys are about to blade, you saw Jericho physically pull out the blade. It's like, wow, camera guys, you got to pull off, or the director needs to pull off of that. Like, never shoot that. Big mistake.
Right. Do you think that in this day and age is blading passe?
And WWE, apparently, somebody from management said that that match set back the business 30 years with all that silly blood, and like they were not happy with all that blood.
I don't think that WWE can say anything. It's not their product. And why are they that upset? I would think that they need to go and look at their own product and make it better rather than knocking somebody else's product.
Yeah, what do they care for?
Right, right.
And then another thing was the finish. So Jericho and the guy MJF are on top of the cage, and MJF says he's going to throw Jericho off the cage if they don't surrender. So they surrender. MJF, of course, throws the guy off the cage anyway. He's a heel who you've hated for months and you say he was this big phony. Of course he's going to lie to you and throw Jericho off the cage. Come on.
Right, right. And how far did Jericho fall from the cage?
They said 15 feet.
Wow.
The only thing was the ramp had cardboard and one of those crash pads. So you could tell when he landed because the camera was so zoomed in on Jericho, it just looked really bad. Later on, they showed a real further angle of a camera shot. If they used that camera shot, everyone would have been like, wow, that was crazy. Or that was awesome. Once you saw the crash pad and the cardboard, kind of like lost it.
Right. I think that for them, that's growing pains. Hey, let's face it, they're brand new. This is the first time they've done this, but this goes to show you that when you're running a pay-per-view, you need everybody on the same page, especially the production people. I mean, you said about they showed Jericho with it in his hand, or reaching for it, and then the crash pads. That takes away from the movie.
There's no doubt about it. We need to get the business on fire again. We'd love to see that. But for today, in today's topic, it is WCW Slamboree 1997, right in the thick of things where WCW was kicking WWF's ass for months on end. And WCW Slamboree, of course, was held on May 18th from Charlotte, North Carolina at the Independence Arena. The attendance, 9,643. Pay-per-view buys, 220,000. Tagline, which I love, the tradition continues. So this is going to be Ric Flair's return from injury by hook or by crook. I think he was going to be on the show and wrestling no matter what, even if he wasn't healthy.
Yeah, I mean, and I do like that tagline, tradition continues. I think that's one of the best lines they ever had for a pay-per-view.
Yeah, they usually have really corny ones, and this one was good. When Flair's about to return, does he say, like, no matter what, I want to be on this card, and you're thinking he's going to be in the main event?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're in Charlotte. This is a pretty easy call. You know he's going to blow the house apart when he comes out.
So Hogan will not be on the show, just to kind of give everybody some early context to it, but obviously Flair will. Is there a reason why the Hulkster isn't going to be on the show?
I think this was locked in that it was going to be in Charlotte. And knowing Rick was going to be on this show, I think Hulk knew, and rightfully so, that he may be playing second fiddle to Rick on this one. I think it was good that Hogan wasn't on every pay-per-view.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right, Hogan, the big name, doesn't necessarily always need to be on the show or need to be on the pay-per-view. Even as the champion, it still didn't need to be on every show, every pay-per-view, I think.
Right, right.
So the other kind of big thing, before we kind of even get more into Flair and stuff, is you are going to be off for a few weeks. You take a couple weeks off, a temporary, I guess, hiatus or maybe a little vacation. What happened here?
Well, I had been running at this thing so hard. I had asked Eric to let me off for a while, and he was nice enough to acquiesce and say, yeah, go ahead. It's a 24-hour-a-day job. You start to get burnt out, and you start to lose creativity, so it was the right time for me to take off.
So it was just a couple weeks, and you were right back in the thick of things? What'd you do?
I went fishing, went diving. Went to the Caribbean. I have friends in the Bahamas and the Turks and Caicos, so I actually went on a big-time fishing trip with friends of mine and dive trip. It was great.
So who was the booker, quote unquote, while you were away for a month taking a vacation?
I think Eric had stepped in and he had support from Kevin and Scott. But Eric stepped up. Yeah.
With everything going on, like you said, you needed a break. Was it a lot of politics that kind of maybe were giving you a little bit of a problem too? I mean, there's so much politics going on in WCW.
Well, there was so much politics, and there was a point where we started to make changes late in the day of the show. And I've never liked that. You know, okay, it can happen once in a while, but it can't happen every show. I spent 16 hours a day going over this for 3 weeks. And now you want to make changes 5 minutes before we go up on air. It got to be a struggle, but that's part of the job. So I don't think it had so much to do with that the grind. It was every day. Flying, going back to the office, flying. On Friday, trying to rush from Atlanta to catch a plane for the weekend shows. It was tough. It was tough.
And Bischoff said it was basically like a battery recharge.
Yeah, yeah. And he was right.
Did that work, though?
Yes, yes. It was great because this is back in the day. I'm between the Bahamas and the Turks and Caicos. I'm not hearing anything.
Now, with you leaving and coming back, it was like WCW was able to just keep on rolling. Did you have a plan set and exactly what you wanted Eric to do? And like, did you tell him, like, okay, this is where we're going?
I had talked to Nash and Hall. They knew, and Kevin was really receptive. So they knew how to keep this thing going. It wasn't like it was going to fall apart.
So this big show, like we said, it's in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's going to be a Flair's return. We knew that he was going to be a big part of the show. We knew the Hulkster wasn't going to be. But the rumor around the show before we knew Hogan wasn't going to be a part of it was that it was going to be Flair, Piper, and Kevin Green against the NWO, which is the original NWO, of right. Hall, Nash, and the Hulkster. Any sort of thinking like, oh, man, it would have been great to have the Hulkster in there? Or does it not even matter because it almost is the real NWO as far as the real Wolfpack of the NWO, which is Hall, Nash, and Six, which is Sean Waltman? Do you think that those three work better and you don't really need Hogan in there? Or did you feel that Hogan was definitely needed?
No, because the Wolfpack was going to do a job in the middle of the ring.
They lost a few months in a row, Hall and Nash. As we were kind of going through, you started like, wow, you don't even remember that because they're so strong as a unit, so and they always get their heat back. But it's funny, they lost a bunch in a row and clean.
Yeah, and they could always get their heat back. That was what worked so well with them. You got to remember, too, at this time, I don't think Hulk had been deep enough into being a heel that he could lose and get his heat back. I don't know if he wouldn't have done the job, but you were going to meet with no resistance. And on this one, especially because being in Charlotte, the tradition continues. That tells you the WCW is going over in my head. You want the people to get the payoff they deserve because that's what they bought it for. They don't want to see a bad finish. And those guys stepped up something late.
Piper, it seemed like maybe a few weeks earlier, kind of teasing maybe a heel turn. Was that ever kind of in the offing? Because people were saying like, oh, it was supposed to happen a few weeks ago. There was a timing cue issue and that didn't happen, but it didn't really seem like he was going to go maybe full-fledged. But was there a Piper heel turn supposedly going to happen?
No, but Roddy always wanted to be unpredictable. One of the reasons why you followed Roddy, you didn't know what he was going to do. And I don't think it was brought up, but he could have turned heel for a short period, but it didn't make any sense at this time because they needed a little boost, meaning WCW. And Roddy turning heel would have kind of watered down the whole process.
So with the Hulkster, he's not there. Supposedly, had some movie commitments as well, which always seem to be popping up at this point, right? He seemed to be in and out of doing a lot of movies. You right. replace him with Six. The rumor backstage was that Flair and Piper were like, oh, we don't know if Six should be in the match. He's not big enough to be in the main event. That was like a rumor going around. Did anybody have any problems with Six being in this main event?
No, absolutely not. And I think Sean Waltman is one of the most underrated guys that was ever been in the business. He made it when he was 170 pounds in the WWE when everybody was 270 and more. Sean is a tremendous, tremendous performer.
What about Mean Kevin Green getting put in this match? Whose idea was that?
I'm sure it was our idea. Kevin worked hard at being a wrestler. Kevin was there every day. Kevin was in incredible shape. Kevin was a great guy. He put in the time. He didn't take it as a second job, man. He worked his ass off to give you what he could, and he did.
With him, the year prior, the Horsemen Arn and Flair and Mongo McMichael turn on him and beat him up and leave him laying him in Savage, and they start the new Four Horsemen. Rob Benoit, obviously, in there as well, and that's the new Four Horsemen. Did that play any factor into, oh, maybe Kevin Green shouldn't be in this match because technically he was feuding with Flair last year, or that's kind of stuff? It's like, okay, Flair is a face now. That was so long ago.
I think it's that in wrestling, sometimes you got to realize, hey, it's just wrestling. It's a year. They have a common enemy. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So that's what I think made it work. And Kevin had played for the Panthers.
Perfect, which means he was over like Rover. And the right. thing is with him, you would think like, okay, this guy, you know, you have to worry about him and his ability. Man, he took to wrestling so easily. He was great. And in minimal practice, I'm sure, minimal time. I feel like if you gave him, the 10,000 plus hours or whatever you want to say to become a professional, he would have easily done it and been great because I think he was a natural.
He worked at this. Kevin could have been a huge star if he started a little earlier and used every offseason to augment his ability as a wrestler.
To build this up on TV, Hall and Nash were saying that Piper and Flair are too old. Was that just a part of the storyline just to get things going, calling them old and stuff? Or is there a little bit of a shoot?
There's a little bit of shoot there.
That like work shoot stuff. I love that because it gets you more invested as a fan. Plus, I felt like Hall and Nash were kind of saying like it was their time. Let these old guys move out of the way. We're the main event now.
Exactly. That's what they were saying. Yeah.
So to start things off in a dark match, somebody that's wrestling right now for AEW and, of course, New Japan Pro Wrestling, absolute legend, Yuji Nagata defeats your boy, Pat Tanaka, in about 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Love that. Yuji Nagata, young guy not known to the States at this point, 1997 as much. Now, 25 years later, huge Japanese legend.
They had come over. The other thing, Pat was in there because Pat's father was Duke Kiyomoka. And Duke Kiyomoka was one of the guys that helped Ricky Dozan's company. And he had something to do with both Baba and Inoki's companies. So Patrick was put in there to make the Japanese feel comfortable right off the bat. So it was good that Patrick was there. It calmed them down, calmed everybody down. And Patrick knew his position.
The next dark match, the Public Enemy, Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, defeat Harlem Heat, Booker T, and Stevie Ray in about 6 minutes. Interesting. In the dark match here, a shocking upset.
Yeah, and it was good to start sometimes these dark matches that you could do that, step out of the comfort zone of what people thought. Hey, I'm not going to miss this next dark match. It was getting people to sit in their seats.
Smart, yeah. Because you think, it's just a dark match, and then they hear a shocking finisher.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as the actual show, we're going to start it off hot with a good opener. Lord Steven Regal defeats Ultimo Dragon with Sonny Ono for the WCW World Television Championship in about 16 minutes. Good match here. Regal, little change of style against Ultimo Dragon. Big time change of style.
He worked very well with the Japanese contingency. All the Japanese wrestlers loved him. Everybody wanted to work with him. And fabulous, fabulous worker.
With him going over Ultimo Dragon, obviously he's going to be the television champion. You like him in that role because obviously multiple-time television champion gets him on TV all the time defending the belt.
Yes. You know right away that you're going to have an incredible match. When you're writing stuff down and you put Regal's name, you say to yourself, well, I just need to find an opponent that he can make look good, meaning Regal. You know that that match is going to take care of itself.
The next matchup, Medusa defeats Luna Vachon in her short WCW stint in about 5 minutes. What do you think about these two here?
I love both of them. I think they're both pioneers of the new wave of women wrestling. Luna, I've always had a soft spot for in my heart. She was an incredible person, and she brought everything to the table, and so did Medusa.
With Luna, did you want to kind of keep her around long? It seemed like WCW did not have a lot of female wrestlers.
Yeah, I would have loved to kept Luna around more. But I think this is when she wanted to go to WWF at the time. And they were kind of luring her away from us. And she wasn't on, if I remember correctly, a lengthy contract.
So it's going to be short and sweet for her as far as her stint.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a problem, like you have Medusa but get nobody to work with her?
Yeah, that became a problem because the reason why Medusa came, one of the reasons, not the only reason, she's great talent, but she dropped the belt in the trash can for us. At the time, I don't think we thought about developing a woman's division like we should have.
Quite a moment.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers that. That was a shocker.
Yes, it was.
Was that Eric's idea, your idea, her idea?
It wasn't my idea, but I think it was her and Eric.
What did you think, taking it too far, or did you love it?
I thought it was good. It was controversial.
The next matchup, Rey Mysterio Jr. defeats Yuji Yasuroka in 15 minutes. Another good match. Yuji's kind of, you know, not as well known as far as just these legendary Japanese cruiserweight stuff, but Rey Mysterio, 15-minute match. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Got him is most youthful. And there's another one. You know they're going to have an incredible match, and it goes back to the title tradition. So I think if you turned it on because you bought that, you said, oh, I guess I got my money worth already. I can't wait to see the rest.
With Ray in 97, is this just a way to get him on the pay-per-view, get him a good win, get him a lengthy match, and just keep the momentum of him going? He's one of the popular acts, obviously one of the best cruiserweights you have, really.
Yeah, it was also to showcase Ray. He was a special talent. Before he came, cruiserweights were like an afterthought. He became a huge, intricate part of not only WCW, but of the wrestling business.
Do you think that in a lot of pay-per-views, showcase matches are good? Like, let's really give this guy a longer match and really showcase his abilities. That's a smart way to get guy over?
Yeah, especially when they're that talented. Ray could do anything without repeating it. It was so different than what they had seen. I think that's the key point. You got to remember, that was 97. How many years has it been now? They hadn't seen anything like Ray. He had burst on the scenes. We need something like that again.
I always say WCW at its best, there was nobody better. When you guys were clicking on all cylinders, you had it all. The main event, the mid-card, the lower card, the cruiserweights. I mean, you had it all.
Yeah, we did.
The next matchup is arguably your favorite feud of all time. Glacier defeats Mortis with James Vandenberg by DQ in 2 minutes. What was going on here with Glacier and Mortis in a short match?
I just felt that which one of these doesn't fit here. You've seen those puzzles where it shows a baboon, a horse, a cow, and then a building. Which one doesn't belong? I was probably wrong.
What about the fact that, though, like, everything else is so serious, and this is very much Mortal Kombat stuff? You know what I mean? Like, does that take away from the show at all?
Probably, but you remember the whole Glacier character, and Mortis was designed to sell a game. Do you remember that? So we're trying to serve two masters.
Bischoff always says it's like, oh, it's a buffet. But do you think that almost having too many different things isn't good necessarily?
A buffet to me is you go to a seafood buffet. You go to a Brazilian buffet. One's all meat, one's all seafood. I don't think you go into a buffet and you're having steak and in the middle of it is a vegan dinner.
And Mortis, he was Chris Canyon, hell of a wrestler. And Glacier was good too, but just that it was just didn't fit WCW at that time, that feud. Just to me, it didn't settle right.
Yeah, and they were just trying to sell the game. And those guys were very good talent. They could have been something better.
Definitely. Next up, Dean Malenko defending the United States Championship, and he defeats Jeff Jarrett with Debra by submission, 15 minutes. So another good, lengthy match. These two, both great workers, good hands. What do you think here?
Tradition. Again, we're showcasing what made WCW different.
Good hands, good wrestlers, good workers.
Yeah, solid.
You think Malenko needed to keep piling up wins here?
Yes. Great, great talent. Can you think of anybody that's as talented as Dean?
Work rate-wise and wrestling-wise, it's tough. I mean, he's at the top of the list of so many people. Technical ability. Right. He was just unbelievable worker. What's going on with Jeff here? Did you not have big plans for him? What are your thoughts on Jeff?
Jeff Jarrett is second-generation wrestler. He's drawn nothing but a lot of money. And at this point, suppose you were a betting man and you're betting on wrestling with your friend. Tell me who you're going to bet is going to win that match.
Probably think Jarrett.
Yeah. So it's the same idea of getting them from the bathroom to sit in their seat. Is, oh, honey, I'm going to go downstairs and get a beer. Oh, who won that match? Oh, Jarrett lost. What? Jarrett lost? Should have kept your ass in the seat, hon.
Jarrett kind of ends up losing because of Mongo McMichael, because of his interference. Did you like having that triangle of Mongo, Debra, and Jeff Jarrett?
Absolutely. That gave some depth to Mongo, gave depth to Debra, gave depth to Jarrett, and gave Jarrett a way to lose gracefully.
What did Mongo think about using Debra on TV? It seems like she kind of wanted to be a star. Was he okay with it?
I think he was. I think he kind of pushed for her with Eric, I think.
So with Debra, obviously, the storyline going forward is going to be the triangle, Debra, Mongo, and Jeff, and kind of play off of each other from there. Which, you know, you could see, beautiful woman, you could see Jeff wanting her, you could see Mongo being jealous.
Right, right. And we could have played with this because Mongo's now in the horseman. Okay, Jeff Jarrett wanted to be a horseman. She looked like she could be horseman material. Mongo, there was all kinds of stuff they could have done with the horsemen and to create different angles. But again, this is an unknown commodity.
The next matchup, Ming defeats Chris Benoit with woman by submission in a quote-unquote death match in about 15 minutes. A bunch of these matches got some good length, so this is another good match.
I knew they would have a good match. A little bit later on, Chris is going to get the win back. So it was actually to boost Ming's credibility that he had taken a few losses and was to get him in a position where when he does the job, because he tapped out to Chris, that this was going to be a solid, solid match.
Basically a building block for the feud.
Right.
With Ming, did you have any like plans for him further, or is this much more of a Benoit, let's get Benoit over kind of thing?
This was much more get Benoit over. No disrespect to Ming. All he needs is to get a win here or there because what an athlete he is.
The next matchup, the Steiner brothers of Rick and Scott defeat Conan and Hugh Morris with Jimmy Hart in about 9 minutes, 30 seconds. This seems kind of like a throw-in just to get the Steiner brothers a win.
The Steiners were the most physical team I think I've ever seen. But Hugh Morris could hold his own, and Conan was a fabulous worker. So it was a good win for the Steiners because, again, they were WCW people. Not saying that Conan wasn't, but he had been a big star in Mexico, so he hadn't grown up in WCW. Hugh Morris came in from Japan. And again, it's tradition. We're following a straight line here.
So the next matchup, Steve Mongo McMichael with Deborah defeats Reggie White. 15 minutes. Shockingly, Reggie White's wrestling here. And then other shockers, 15-minute match for Reggie White.
Yeah.
How did this all come together?
Rick was so well-liked in other sports, and it shows even to today, that once Kevin got into it and Mongo got into it, I think Reggie, he probably said, hey, wow, that was a good gig you guys got. Can I get involved in it? And Reggie, one of the nicest human beings I ever met in my life. You know, here's another one. It gave us credibility having two of the greatest defensive players, and maybe three all-pro defensive players on our lineup. That's saying something pretty cool.
A lot of football going on here in May, you know, for 1997. Three guys, Reggie White, Mongo, and Kevin Green.
Yep.
Just funny looking back, it's like Mongo against Reggie White. Like, Mongo not known as the guy who can carry a guy that's a celebrity either. So it's like, wow, this better be short and sweet. And it goes 15, you're like, whoa, yeah. Well, crazy.
I wasn't timing the show. And I think they did that because we did get a lot of publicity, if you remember, John, on ESPN. And we got a lot of publicity. And I think they thought, well, again, give them a 4-minute match.
Should have been short and sweet. It wasn't. Yeah. But interesting and really cool looking back. Like, wow, Reggie freaking White, one of the greatest players of all time. Right. One of the greatest defensive players, maybe the greatest, up there with LT. Just like, wow, right. I can't believe we got Reggie White to wrestle. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. Very cool.
Smart for Mongo to go over here, too?
I think so, because as great as Reggie was, he was only going to do a couple. I think we only had him signed for two, and didn't he only do one?
Then we have the main event of the evening, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, which would be his first match back in 6 months. And the rowdy one, Rowdy Roddy Piper, and Mean Kevin Green, defeating the NWO, Hall, Nash, and Six in about 17 minutes and 20 seconds. Great match. I just go back and I love it. People always talk about, oh, the Canadian Stampede with the Hart Foundation against Austin's team and the heat in the match. This had that same feel to it. Man, the crowd was nuts.
Couldn't have been a better homecoming for Rick. And again, tradition. We started off with it and put a period at the end of the sentence, so it worked out well.
This is going to be, like you said, a huge hometown advantage. Flair's pop when he comes out is just immense. It's crazy. I know you technically were on a vacation, but you knew, like, once you book Flair in Charlotte, the crowd is just going to love him.
Yeah, you know, he's coming home. Prodigal son returns. It was great. And Rick should have gotten that treatment. He's Ric Flair.
So basically what happens in the finish is Flair gets the pinfall, but he's got the figure four on Hall, but it goes for the pinfall. Nash technically passes out to the sleeper hold, and right. Kevin Green finishes off six. So all three guys are laid out in a loss, with Piper, Flair, obviously, and Kevin Green going over in big win. Kind of didn't expect that, especially with all that trash talking about those guys being too old and the NWO really selling it, that they're the next stars. I didn't expect it at all.
And it goes to show you that with all the bickering, when it came to do business, the NWO did business. You and I have heard for years about how they never put anybody over. I've heard the same thing about Hogan. Okay, he was a little bit more selective. But they could put people over and not get hurt. And they knew what was right and what was wrong. And it was certainly right for Rick's team to go over. And they made sure that Rick got his just due. They could have buckled up a little, but they didn't. So kudos to them. Sometimes when you get in the ring, you do the right thing. And they did the right thing.
100%. I mean, people talk about them not wanting to do business. Man, they did business and then stuff. They made those guys look like $1 million. Did played a great role of the heels, basically taking that loss. And Flair should have won, and he won. So, I mean, just great job by Hall, Nash, and Six doing that.
Right, right.
Pretty awesome. Looking back, I got to say, thumbs up. I love this show, and the main event really just, it just does it for me. I just loved the main event. Thought it was the perfect finish.
I thought so, too. I thought they handled it terrifically.
You giving two thumbs up for the show?
Without question. It started off right and ended right. I don't think it could have been any better, John, to tell you the truth.
Totally agree. And that is a great stopping point. You could follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @2manpowertrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Go to prowrestlingtees.com and check out Kevin Sullivan's great store over there. Also, check out Taskmaster Talks on Instagram and check out doublehell.com. Double Hell Wrestling T-shirts. Kevin has a huge store over there at a total array of shirts over there. And that is doublehell.com. Kevin, got anything else going on?
Yeah, I'll be at Indianapolis at the big wrestling convention this weekend, and the following weekend I'll be down in Texas at SWE Fury. Enzo is making his debut. Kevin Nash is going to be there in June. So things are really rolling. So if anybody's in Indianapolis or in Texas in the next couple of weeks, please drop in and say hello to me.
Awesome. Great stuff as always. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week on Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks.